It is 25 minutes after the hour. It is now a therapeutic Thursday, and we're joined by Pastor Robbie Pruitt. Robbie, an Anglican pastor, he resides in Virginia. His church is there, and he is the executive director of Preserving Bible Times. And Robbie, I'm amazed that you're still upright and functional. This is Lent. Easter's coming up. For pastors, this is a busy, busy time.
It's a busy season. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Jim and David. Good to be with you all on the Broken Road, as always. Yeah, I've already got the week after Easter blocked off for a time of disappearing.
Oh, good, yeah. Maybe you could go to a desolate place with your disciples, you know?
I'm going to withdraw to a desolate place by myself.
Well, that's what it
is. Well, I say by myself with my wife and four children.
Yeah, so. And you're never by yourself there, and that's a good place to be. And just savor that you've got young kids. Just enjoy them to pieces, because that time goes so fast. We're talking about how the Bible teaches us to loaf, in a manner of speaking. But it's not what I implied there, because in Mark 6 and Mark 8 and John 6, it talks about the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000 in detail that is identical from John 6 to Mark 6, for example, the feeding of the 5,000. Robbie, how could that be? I mean, down to the 12 baskets left over. Should I be suspicious of something here, contextually?
Well, I think it's fantastic. I mean, that we have this particular miracle, the feeding of the 5,000, and that's men only. So we're talking 15,000 to 20,000 people being fed by Jesus.
Because people came from all over the surrounding cities. They got there ahead of Jesus and his disciples. And I think this was up near Bethsaida, wasn't it?
It is, yeah. And the significance there of where they are is also significant to who Jesus asked to go buy food for the crowd. Mm-hmm. So Philip is from Bethsaida.
Yeah, this is the northeast shore of the Sea of Galilee. So
that's
so you
right.
Can place
that's
it
right.
On the map.
Yeah. So Jesus asked Philip, where can we go to buy bread for these? And Philip says, hey, even if we had enough money, you can't find enough bread here. And he being from that area, he would know out of all people. But this particular miracle, the feeding of the 5,000, shows up in not only the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but it shows up in John's gospel too, and really sets into motion the bread of life discourse, which is pretty much found only in John. But that's based off of this miracle, the feeding of the 5,000.
Two books of vastly different character. And yet the details are identical. This must have made a real impression. I mean, obviously it did on the disciples.
Indeed. And so the significance here of the feeding of the 5,000, there's so many little contextual nuggets. For instance, the little boy whose lunch they borrow, he has barley loaves. And barley loaves are actually food for the less wealthy, the people who are eating barley loaves are not as good as loaves of bread made by wheat. And so this is a poor boy's lunch. And the five loaves and the two small fish feeding so many. I mean, you were talking, they call it the Galilee fish, and it's pretty much like a bluegill and like a brim is what we might know in 21st century America. Got a little pond in my backyard. I've got actually one of these fish in my 55-gallon tank here, and I couldn't imagine me eating that fish and feeling full, let alone 15 to 20,000 people. So this little boy who has such a small amount of food, this borrowed lunch of these five barley loaves feed this multitude. And so Jesus is certainly, in John's gospel, this is one of the I am statements where Jesus says, I am the bread of life. And this is one of seven I am statements in John's gospel. And that's the significance of this particular sign in John.
The crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. That's what it says, how it reads in John chapter 6. Jesus went up on the mountain there. He sat down with his disciples. In Mark's account, they went to a desolate place, but there was a city there. So it must have been just outside the city on the hillside. In fact, they portray it quite nicely in the Chosen in the TV series there, and how this whole thing could have come to be. In fact, they've even got the Pharisees at the end of the event there, who are coming to investigate what all this is about. Mark goes into right into the 4,000 too in chapter 8 from chapter 6. How far apart in time do you suppose these were? From the feeding the 5,000 to the feeding of the 4,000. I used to get them confused. I figured, well, maybe, oh, did you mean 5,000? Or, oh, did you mean 4,000?
No? Well, that's just it. I mean, if it's enough that this is such a grand miracle, but not only is it a grand miracle, but Jesus does it twice. I mean, he feeds the 5,000, and we get this in Mark 6. And you say, what's the distance? Well, about two chapters, because in Mark 8, you see the feeding of the 4,000. And these are two very distinctive, separate accounts.
And they're two different locations as well.
Right. And the feeding of the 4,000 is not showing up in all the gospel accounts. I mean, John does not have a record of the feeding of the 4,000. But here in Mark, the shortest gospel, we have a record of both. So the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark 6, and then the feeding of the 4,000 in Mark 8. And so these particular places are significant because Jesus is feeding the Jewish people near Bethsaida in Mark 6, but he's feeding the Gentiles, the 4,000 are the feeding of the Gentiles, and that's probably on the coast, the eastern coast of the Sea of Galilee,
the Decapolis, where he would have healed the demoniac, or would have at a later. I'm not sure the chronology of those two events, but it was a place where observant Jews were forbidden to go.
Yeah,
and so
that particular case, I mean, it's similar. Jesus calls his disciples to him. But now, instead of saying, let's come away by ourselves, let's just look at Mark 6. At the feeding of the 5,000, the apostles were gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught. And there became so many people that they were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat. And Jesus says to them, come away by yourself to a quiet place to get some rest. And they went to the solitary place. And this is preceding this is a large crowd gathering, and there are so many people. And so by this time, it was late in the day, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place. And they said, it's already very late, send the people away, because these people had gathered. And this is Mark 6, 32 and 35 and 36. And the disciples are saying, you know, send these people away. So Jesus and his disciples can't even pull away from the crowd. They keep following. They keep gathering. They're wanting to hear from the rabbi. And he begins to teach. And everyone gets hungry. And Jesus says, hey, you give them something to eat. You provide for them. And then they said to him, it would take more than a half a year's wages. And are we to spend so much on bread? And in the other account, Jesus particularly asked Philip, who was from that area. And so they find the boy's got the five loaves and the two small fish. In juxtaposition, the feeding of the 4,000, there's a crowd, and Jesus has compassion on the people. They're there actually for three whole days and have nothing to eat. And Jesus says, if I send them away hungry, they'll collapse on their way because of the long distance. And his disciples answered, but this is a remote place. So here they're in a more of a remote place, far away from anything. It's been 3 days. And then here there's not five loaves in Mark chapter 8, but seven. And that's the number for perfection. So you've got five loaves, which there's really not a significance in the five, but if you add the two fish, you've got seven. And then here in Mark 8, you've got the seven loaves. And it doesn't tell us, from Mark's account at least, what kind of bread it is.
Now, I have to ask you, and this is a touchy question, I know. You mentioned the symbolic meaning of the number seven. The number 12 is also the 12 baskets from the feeding of the 5,000, seven baskets from the feeding. Were these numbers made up to convey another message in the account of these two events, Was it coincidence? Is that numerology significant for us?
Yeah, I don't believe the author is making this up. That's exactly how many loaves and fishes they had. 5 and 2 in the feeding of the 5,000, and then 7 and a few most likely meaning 2 fish. And he gives thanks, and he distributes them, and they were all eating and satisfied. And again, they collect 7 baskets full of leftovers in the feeding of the 4,000. But as you mentioned, to the Jews, they collect 12 baskets of leftovers. Now, there's 12 tribes in Israel, and there's 12 disciples. And we find out later, specifically and only really in Mark's gospel, there's this dialogue between Jesus and his disciples who forget to bring bread on their journey. So Mark has this summation of the two miracles, and that you can find in Mark chapter 8, starting at verse 14. It says, the disciples had forgotten to bring bread except for one loaf they had with them in the boat. And then Jesus begins to teach his disciples, saying, be careful. And Jesus warned them, watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. And they discuss with one another, saying, is it because we have no bread? Is he talking about yeast because we don't have enough bread here? And then Jesus, being aware of the discussion, asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see? Do you have ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember when I broke the 5 loaves of the 5 for the 5,000? That's the first miracle, the feeding of the 5,000. And then he says, how many basketfuls did you pick up? And they said 12. And then Jesus says, when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many basketful did you pick up? And they answered 7. And he said to them, do you still not understand?
Now, so Jesus, wait a minute. That says to me that the numbers 12 and 7 had special meaning to them.
Yeah, that's right. Now pick this up now. 12 baskets, one for every disciple, one for every tribe of Israel. I'm going to feed all of you. And then the second miracle, 7 perfectly. So there's your message here in Mark chapter 8, verses 14 through 21. He said to them in verse 21, do you still not understand? So 12, that's everyone. And then 7 is the number for perfection. So how many baskets full? Everybody had an extra basket. And then after the feeding of the 4,000, there were 7 baskets left over. So to his disciples, specifically the 12, I'm going to feed each of you perfectly. Do you still not understand?
So the numbers don't have to be important to us, but the fact that the numbers were important to them is important to us. That's part of the context we need to understand.
Yeah, and it's not that the author wrote this in. It's that God's miracle in his providence, not only did he feed the 5,000 and the 4,000, but in his providence, he had a specific amount of leftovers, the 12 and the 7 baskets. Those 12 baskets and those 7 baskets are significant because it's signifying to the disciples and to Israel, I'm going to feed all of you. And then the number 7, he's even going to feed the Gentiles perfectly, because that was, again, the Gentiles. Again, the number 7 being perfection, you've got a perfect feeding of all of God's people.
So it's not just a matter of having excess food, but it suggests that the number of baskets was not accidental, was not incidental or coincidental. It was intentional.
Yes, there's a message here, and what's left over, the message is clear. And so I don't believe the author's making this up. I believe that God is orchestrating the scene to not only provide for his people, but to communicate a specific truth. And that is that Jesus is the bread of life. And all of this is connecting back to Jesus feeding his children in the wilderness. Remember, the 12 tribes were wandering in the wilderness. And for 40 years, God rained down this manna. And manna is the question, what is it? Because the people didn't understand what was happening.
The meaning of the word is, what is it? Yeah.
That's right. Manna, what is it? And when Jesus comes onto the scene, he tells his disciples to pray, give us this day our daily bread, which is a hearkening back or remez back to the provision of manna in the wilderness. And then here in John's gospel, specifically John chapter 6, Jesus is saying, I am the bread of life. So in John chapter 6 is where we get the particular context of not only where they are, they're up on a mountain, and the Passover is at hand. The Feast of the Jews is at hand. Jesus lifted up his eyes and saw the large crowd coming towards him. And then John's gospel wants us to know that Jesus said to Philip. Now, Mark's gospel's missing this particular detail. And Jesus asked Philip, and if you study Philip and where he's called, it's around Bethsaida. And this is near this large patch of grass where this crowd is gathered. And Jesus says, where do we buy bread that so many people may eat? And then I love it when the text tells us the context. The text tells us how to read this in chapter 6, verse 6 of John. He said this to test Philip, for he knew what he was about to do. And then Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not buy enough for each of them just to get a little bit. Now, we know that the people didn't eat just a little bit. They ate until they were satiated or satisfied, and then the leftovers. So it's not just that there was bread enough for everyone to have a little bit. It's that there was bread enough for everyone to have an abundance, and then there was bread and fish enough to have 12 baskets of leftovers. So then one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to them, there's a boy here, and there's the context, who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Again, this little boy is most likely impoverished. These are small barley loaves. They're not like if you're going to choose some bread to eat. I just went to a Great Harvest Bread Company on Tuesday in Alexandria, Virginia. It's one of my favorite places to go. Picked up a loaf of sourdough bread for my wife and some pumpkin bread. And it's delicious. Like if you were going to go into a bread store and choose bread to eat, most Jews would not choose barley. Barley loaves are not the greatest eating bread that you can
know what you ought to do is go back to that bakery and have them ask if they will bake some barley loaves to take to your congregation as part of your presentation there. I mean, what a neat touch that would be.
Yeah, not a bad idea. I mean, this is Sunday's sermon, so we're in the lectionary, and we're heading to the feeding of the 5,000, and this is the text. Is in John's, actually from John's gospel, not the Mark's account, so maybe I'll see if they have some barley on hand. They might look at me like I'm crazy. I don't know that people are making barley loaves even today, you know.
Or charge you a lot of money, one of the other.
Right, right. Well, I know the owner, so we'll see.
Well, see, there you go. And it's a kind of cross promotion. They would get credit, and so would you for being authentic. and just little touches like that are just so neat. I remember we brought some challah bread and then some unleavened bread as well to go with communion one time, and it just makes an impression on the congregation. Like, oh, this is real. This is real stuff we're talking about here. So just a suggestion. Yeah, I'm serious. I mean, I think it would be a really nice touch.
I might actually do that. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, please do.
Please we do fundraisers that are in between services, and we usually serve meals or serve snacks or sometimes breakfast and sometimes eggs and an egg dish and whatever. And one year we served NSIMA, NSIMA. It's a cooked down corn mush that the orphans in Malawi eat.
Oh man.
And it's glutinous and it's nasty stuff. It has no taste. absolutely no taste. In fact, and we had lots left over.
It reminds me of grits in the South. You know, we ate a lot of grits in the stone ground. Mm-hmm. Grits. The yellow kind's the best, I think.
But, see, in this culture, it is so intriguing when you see something that people of ancient times actually experienced, consumed, lived with in their day-to-day lives. That's part of the context, too. And, of course, as the executive director of Preserving Bible Times, and I know with my association with the ministry, that context is so important. And if we can communicate the original meaning of a passage of text to today's modern audience, so they understand it the way the original audience understood it, it becomes much more powerful.
Yeah, because we gloss over these details, like the fact that Jesus asked Philip and not one of the other disciples where to buy bread. If you understand the context that he's from that area, you understand that he's the person to ask.
So are Andrew and Peter from Bethsaida. So
right. So, and then the other thing is the barley loaves, just the significance of that being a poor person's lunch that Jesus makes an abundance out of. There's only small little, five small little loaves, and yet Jesus is going to make an abundance. This isn't a snack. This is ends up being quite the feast.
Mm. It was so fun with that church service when I did the communion with them, and I had challah bread and unleavened bread. I also brought donuts and put it on the table. And to my pride and joy, no one took a donut. Mm. They wanted something authentic, instead. Mm. Although I did have one lady come up afterwards and say, can I have those donuts? I
said, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, in Encounters with Jesus on chapter 11, page 95, Doug Greenwald talks about, this daily bread, this idea that when we ask God to give us our daily bread, this is our hearkening back to the manna. And not only is God going to provide enough for us, there's more than enough. So this remez, or this hearkening back to the wilderness wanderings and God's care and provision for his people, Jesus really is, with gathering up these 12 baskets of leftovers, he's trying to remind his disciples that he is the bread that came down from heaven. He's trying to remind them that as God sustained their forefathers in the wilderness, God will continue to sustain us today. We can trust him with our daily bread. We can trust him not only to provide for us adequate amounts of food and provision to sustain us, but even in abundance.
And on that boat ride, he was talking about the Pharisees and the yeast of the Pharisees, and that is the wrong teaching, the heresy, right. the warping of Jewish law that was going on. And they all got the message, because they went on and did amazing things for the balance of their lives. This was part of their discipline, part of their teaching. And what the disciples did, I just wish we knew more about that historically. A lot of church traditions about what happened to them and where they went. But they were certainly changed fundamentally by those 3.5 years with Jesus, and by the resurrection, and by the Great Commission. And we need to value those disciples. I mean, they did amazing things after Jesus' time. Yeah. Robbie, again, the executive director of Preserving Bible Times. Their website is preservingbibletimes.org, and there's a brand new audiobook out there called That Good Samaritan, which is an amazing story in itself about compassion and mercy and who's my neighbor. And you can go there and take a look at that, and also sign up for the newsletter, the Between the Lines newsletter. Robbie puts that out. You just put one out last week, didn't you?
Yeah, promoting that audiobook you just mentioned. That you did a great job reading, by the way.
Well,
that
you.
Good Samaritan. And we can also get, who is our neighbor from Jesus feeding the 4,000, right?
Indeed.
There's people over there in the Decapolis. They're our neighbors too.
Yeah. Great lessons in this in these passages today. Robbie, thank you for that. Thank you for the analysis. And we'll look forward to next week. And in the meantime, stay safe, be well, and do good. Okay?
Thanks for having me on The Broken Road. A pleasure to be with you, Jim and David.
Bye-bye.